This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. North Carolina will embark on another 3 weeks of Safer at Home Phase 2. Governor Roy Cooper announced the extension Tuesday, and that day the state set a record high for coronavirus hospitalizations. It broke that record the next day. Key metrics for the severity of the pandemic are still trending in the wrong direction. Rose Hoban is a reporter and the editor of North Carolina Health News. Her organization has been reporting on these trends and their effect on the state. Rose, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Anita, how are you?
Good. So a lot of the conversation about the coronavirus this week has been focused on schools. But today we're going to look at some of the other things that are in the news and should be, and some of the other metrics. So the state is always monitoring several benchmarks: hospitalizations, positive cases, and testing. And maybe you can take me into cases and testing and tell me where we are.
Well, first off, you did mention that we had hit a couple records on hospitalization, and we hit another record today. We've got 1,180 people currently in the hospital, so that's a lot of people. But you were asking about testing. State's doing a lot more testing now, and what that's yielding us is that we're finding lots more cases because you test more, you find the ones that are there. It's not like you test more and you find more. It's you test more and you find what's out there. And so we have been finding what's out there. Yesterday, we did more than 25,000 cases in the state. And I'm just clicking between windows here. And I think what we got was, there it is. It's another 2,160 cases yesterday. So that's, again, it's a lot of folks. The one thing that was it's a wee bit heartening, but I'm afraid to call it a trend yet, is we've had 2 days where our positivity rate is 8%. And I've had like people ping me on Twitter and write to me and say, wait, well, we had 2,100 cases yesterday, and we did 25,000. We did 25,000 tests. But one of the things that folks don't understand is that the total tests lag. So and I'm sure you've been hearing about this in the news. You go looking for a test, and they say, "Oh, it'll be 5 to 6 days before you get your result." Well, it's also 5 to 6 days before the state gets the result. So you can have 25,000 people test, but we don't get 25,000 results in a given day.
Got it.
Sometimes we're looking backwards, even as, you know, in order to like on the positives, we're looking back over 7 or 8 days, however long is the longest reporting period. So it's a little bit complicated. The math is not quite as straightforward as that. And sometimes I think that can be confusing for folks.
So the pace of infections has been increasing. We're breaking records day by day in the number of people that are hospitalized. At the beginning of the pandemic, we were talking a lot about hospital capacity. And take me to where we are now. Are hospitals worried about running out of room with these high rates of hospitalization?
I have not heard hospitals or the secretary talk about, like, gee, we're worried that next week we're going to be overwhelmed. Part of that is, and in the DHHS metrics website, they'll say, "Hey, we've got a grand total of close to 22,000 beds available, and 2,500 of them are unfilled or unstaffed. You can have a bed, but if you don't have nurses, doctors, orderlies to manage that bed, it's as good as not having the bed at all." What's interesting, and I've talked to hospital leaders at multiple locations, is that they have surge plans that include things like, hey, we can put six regular beds into this conference room. We can take the gym that we use for physical therapy and put 8 beds in there. So I know that a number of the hospitals have, as much as 100, 200 extra beds worth of capacity. And remember also, we have this hospital down in the Sandhills that's got 70 beds that we could put non-COVID patients into who just need to be staying in the hospital without COVID while we use COVID, while we use the capacity that are in hospitals for COVID patients.
Okay, so there's still contingency plans in place, but hospitals so far haven't had to move to that surge capacity of filling conference rooms and all of that. So, I mean, we're talking about data, and we've been tracking data this whole time, and we've been getting these big data dumps every week, and we know how important it is for informing what the governor does and what happens on the state level. But there was a change this week, a federal mandate announced that's going to change up how data is reported. So data used to go from hospitals to the CDC via the state health department, but that structure is changing. So tell me about the change in structure and what effect that's going to have on our access to data.
Well, we will still have access to the data that DHHS is collecting. There were, in some states, hospitals were reporting straight to the CDC and bypassing their states. In North Carolina, we've been reporting to the state, and then the state has been reporting to the CDC. Now, the administration, the Trump administration, has asked for this data to go to the federal departments of Department of Health and Human Services, the federal DHHS. And they hired a company to do a bunch of data aggregation and analytics. This is folks concerned because the CDC is a long trusted public health entity that, you know, folks understand it. This company now that's working with DHHS at the federal level, there's been so much politicization over data, right? So even if this was all just well-intentioned, The well has been poisoned by people's worries about data transparency. The rollout was done very awkwardly in that they did it overnight. Like, they didn't give people any heads up, like, hey, you know, this is going to change, like, in 2 days. So they did it almost practically overnight. And what the secretary said yesterday during her press conference when I asked her about it was that, you know, right now, North Carolina's DHHS is reporting to the CDC about 30 data points every day. Now they're being asked to do about 96 data points. And so it's sort of tripling the work. Some of those data points they have, some of those data points they're going to have to compile. So it's a bunch of extra work for DHHS at a time where they're kind of sort of doing a lot of work already.
Yeah.
So that's been their big concern.
I want to move now to some reporting that you did about health insurance that I thought was really interesting. So you looked at the number of people who have lost jobs during the pandemic and then the impact that this is going to have on people who lose health insurance. Estimates indicating that nearly 200,000 people have lost health insurance in North Carolina because of job loss. So talk to me.
It's a range.
Okay.
It could be anywhere from about 100,000 to 200,000.
Got it. So talk about the impact of that loss and what could be done.
Well, something to know about rates of uninsurance. We learn about rates of uninsurance about a year after they happen. The census asks people about rates of uninsurance. The state does that, but the data always lags. So we're doing estimates now. We're estimating using the Commonwealth Fund, and this was from several economists, but the Commonwealth Fund surveyed, you know, a couple thousand people and asked people who had lost jobs and found out that about 20% of those folks had lost employer-sponsored insurance in the course of losing their jobs. So, you know, then the numbers become like, well, if we take this 20% as kind of a benchmark, and it could be as high as 40%, which is why you have this wide range. And so anywhere from 20 to 40% of people lost employer-sponsored insurance when they lost their jobs.
And that's particularly significant in North Carolina because we didn't expand Medicaid, so there's going to be this gap of people who won't be insured. I don't have a ton of time left, but could you just tell me briefly about what's going to happen to this group of people that are going to be kind of caught in the middle in North Carolina.
No, they're going to be uninsured.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the thing, that like they're not going to have any recourse. Like, a lot of these are low-income workers who could have qualified for Medicaid under an expansion. And what the Commonwealth Fund found was that 70% of the newly uninsured across the country are in the 14 states that did not expand Medicaid. We're one of them. We're one of the largest states that has not expanded Medicaid. So that's where these numbers come from, is that, you know, probably around 200, 250,000 people, you know, became uninsured. Some of them were able to get insurance through the marketplace, but a big chunk of them will remain uninsured because we haven't expanded Medicaid. That's not happening in New York. That's not happening in Illinois. That's not happening in now Oklahoma, which has lately become the latest state to expand Medicaid. They voted on it in a primary this past month. And so now Oklahoma will expand Medicaid, but North Carolina has not. And that means that we'll have just an even larger percentage of working age adults who don't have access to health insurance.
All right. People can find more. I've got to close it there, Rose. I'm so sorry. People can find more about that by going to the North Carolina Health News website, that and a lot of other COVID-19 reporting. Rose, thanks so much.
Thank you, Anita.
Stay with us on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.